Hey, everybody, it's Ryan Ripley. Wanted to get a new offering in front of you as soon as possible, evidence-based leadership. And so as you all know, Todd Miller, myself, and Will Seeley, we're big on evidence-based management. We want to apply it to the leadership space. We all know that modern managers face complex challenges every day. You're juggling a lot of needs, your direct reports, your stakeholders, your customers, they all need constant attention. What we want to do is help you manage that. We want you to use information and data to make good decisions around all of these areas so that we're delivering the right thing at the right time for the right customer. And we know that we're doing that because we're using data and evidence to validate all the things that we're doing. And not only that, we're not just looking at value, but we're looking at our capabilities as an organization. Can we deliver on time? Can we innovate effectively? Do we have too much tech debt? Do we have too many things in process? Are we unable to deliver when the market demands that we do? We look at all of these things with evidence-based management. We merge that into a leadership mindset and lens, and we enable you to make new and better decisions repeatedly based off of the data that you're collecting within your organization. It's exciting stuff. We hope you can join us. Visit agileforhumans.com/EBL course. Join us in one of these offerings. We think you're going to love it. Hope you can join us. Use Agile for Humans, the number 4, to take another 15% off of this course, and we can't wait to see you there. Hey, we're back. Todd, it's been a while.
It has been a while. Can you remember what the buttons do?
Yeah, we're figuring it all out. Welcome. It's a new series here on Agile for Humans. Scrum is hard and disruptive. What do you think of that title, Todd?
Yeah, based off of a white paper Ken wrote, right?
Yeah. So back in 2006, co-creator of Scrum, Ken Schwaber, wrote this white paper. Not even, it's really more like a post. It's 15 ideas about why Scrum is hard and disruptive. We thought it might be neat to go back and take a look at some of the things that Ken's put together. And so we're going to take a look at all 15 comments or thoughts or big ideas that Ken had back in 2006. See if they still apply. We're pretty sure they do, but also break them down a bit and just see, you know, these were the big thoughts back then. Have they carried forward, right? Have we moved past them, or have we still not even gotten close to addressing all of these things? So kind of a neat look into the past, and hopefully it works out well for everyone else.
Yeah. Some neat ideas. To be fair too. We're just going to take a stab at them just like right out of the gate. It's not like we're studying these and over-preparing. So no.
Not at all. That's not our style. So no. Todd, the first one, Scrum is a framework for iterative incremental development using cross-functional self-managing teams. It is built on industry best practices, lean thinking, and empirical process control. So as early as 2006, Ken was touting lean thinking and empiricism as the underpinnings of Scrum. That's pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, there is. What's interesting about this whole thing is how much there is to talk about in, you know, two sentences, starting from iterative incremental development, right? Iterative incremental development. So iterative to mean, right, we have the short window, we have sprints, right? 1 month or less. Incremental meaning we get to something that's done at the end of every iterative cycle, right? So iterative and incremental, I think, being two key cogs of the foundation of what Scrum is. I view iterative as the sprint and incremental as the increment. Do you view it any different than that?
Or? No. I think what's cool here is that, you know, incremental meaning we're not going to get it all done or all correct or all perfect on the first crack. Mm-hmm. You know, we've spent a lot of time lately talking about product backlog management. We've spent a lot of time talking about PBIs and how we get to the smallest, simplest thing that we could build. But we're not just taking a big thing and building it into 10 parts. We're taking a big thing and we're figuring out, we're almost mining for gold. You know, that incremental part is really like, there's this big idea. What's that little piece that we can pull out and build and add to our current increment or build a new increment, but only the most valuable stuff. So we are iteratively seeking value. We're validating that value and we're incrementally basically taking what we've discovered about our product and building it out. And the garbage rocks, the non-gold, the non-mineral, those get tossed to the side, right?
Yeah. And we can only do that if we have a team that's capable of doing it, right? And so to kind of segue us into that, using cross-functional stuff managing teams. So in order to be iterative and incremental, you need a team that has all of the skills on it necessary to get and build iterative and incrementally, cross-functional, right? We have all the skills that we need. I kind of have been thinking about this in terms of like construction and building a house, right? You have people like myself, I'm pretty good with electrical work. I'm pretty good at drywalling, but I have weaknesses. That's why I have maybe have a little bit of a team that gets together to do all the things that you need to do to build a house or finish a room or something like that. We have everything we need to say, yeah, that room is done, right? And we're going to ship it. We're going to have the people come in and use it. So I think that word cross-functional, meaning we have all the skills we need to be iterative and incremental without any dependency on anyone else, right?
You know, and that self-managing has really, I've learned so much this year. So this year I'm coaching 10 youth football. So youth football. And as a coach on a sideline, your view is worse than the fan in the stands, right? Fan in the stands, you can see the whole field. You can see the line. You can see what's happening. I can see a sliver of it. And so we've had to empower kids. They're 10 years old to help redirect and reform and change where kids are at, change blocking calls, change blitzes. When the adults think we know so much better, but we can't see half the field. And it's been a real lesson in self-managing because we've taught them, here are the rules and the guidelines and the principles behind what we need you to do. Here are the bad situations we're trying to avoid, and now make some good decisions. And it's amazing, Todd, 10-year-olds can do this with a goal and some boundaries and constraints. They can manage to make good decisions like 90% of the time, and they have to because we can't see what's going on. And it's kind of like, and I started thinking about this from a scrum perspective, if we're the scrum master, if we're the development director, if we're the manager, we're not seeing everything that's happening, right? Mm-hmm. And so a self-managing team, it's essential. Like we can't work with in this iterative, incremental, cross-functional way if these teams can't call the audibles and make the switches in the moment when they need to.
Yeah. That's an interesting way to look at it. You said goals there, cross-functional self-managing teams, Scrum Guide 2020 with the introduction of product goal and sprint goal. Sprint goal was mentioned before, but product goal is new. It's a longer term objective for the Scrum team. One's active at a time. Sprint goal has been in the Scrum Guide, but not an official commitment. Now it is. Goals are really important. In sports, it's easy. Win or lose.
Yeah.
Win or lose, right? As a team. And it can be that easy if our goals are structured in a way that everybody understands them. So I think a lot of organizations have some work to do there still. So, and then kind of continuing on here, industry best practices. This is a word this is a really interesting statement to me, industry best practices. And I'm wondering if we could go back in time to see what Kent meant by industry best practices here, because a lot of what we do now, Scrum Guide is only 13 pages long now.
Yeah,
and so it's a framework, and I think that maybe some of the finer intricacies are built off of the industry best practices. Maybe a daily Scrum that's 15 minutes long, right? That's a good practice for developers to get together and have that conversation. Maybe a best practice is in 30 days or less, right? The duration of a sprint. Other than that, I wouldn't say Scrum is really filled with a ton of best practices.
Well, I think they've actually been peeled away. And what's interesting is perhaps earlier versions of the Scrum Guide had a few specific things like standardized questions for the daily Scrum, for example. As we've learned going forward, and this is Ken, I think is spot on here. Industry best practices are all over the current version of the framework. But I wonder if some of that idea of there even being best practices kind of got peeled away over the last nearly 20 years since this was written. And I think that's kind of a neat thing to look at, too, is that the Scrum Guide has gotten smaller and smaller. More directive things have gotten pulled out. And so maybe the best practices, like you're saying, are baked into the events, the artifacts, and the accountabilities, and not so much on like a burn-up chart is what we use, or here's the right three questions.
Yeah, which actually, segue again, is lean thinking, right? Yeah. Get rid of the unnecessary waste. I guess that's really maybe distilling lean thinking down too simple, but ultimately that's where the Scrum Guide has gone and evolved. I mean, this is 2006. So from where we sit today in 2023, you're talking 17 years and 17 years of learning and the evolution of Scrum, dealing with lean thinking. And like you mentioned, I think a good example of that and how that's represented in the Scrum Guide is the three questions in the daily Scrum. Also could be the addition of, because sometimes you need to add things, is the Scrum values in 2017 were added, right? And so that was in recognition of the behavioral ramifications of using cross-functional teams that are self-managing that may not be common in an office environment. So I guess I'm just taking that line of sight to it.
Well, and to your point, Todd, that means empiricism was at play. Empirical process control means that we keep everything transparent and which means well understood. We inspect frequently and we make adaptations. And so with the Scrum Guide, for example, some things got added back in or added in, you know, the values came in. Well, there was an observation that they were needed. I think it was right. But empiricism is at the root and for empirical process control is absolutely at the core of Scrum. It's the ability to have well understood work, to inspect that work, and to make adaptations as soon as responsibly possible. And every Scrum event is an opportunity to inspect and adapt. Every artifact in Scrum is kept transparent by people performing their accountabilities. And that allows the team, the organization, the stakeholders to all understand what they're looking at, inspect frequently, and adapt to stay aligned to customer needs, value, and markets.
Yeah. And this is from empiricism from a product and process perspective, right? We have from a product perspective, we have a product owner that is always thinking about what's the most valuable thing to do and then bringing stakeholders in to have a sprint review. Right, so that's baked in from product for Scrum. And then we have process where the Scrum team meets in sprint retrospective and empirically inspection, adaptation, and transparency. Decide how to improve the process, right? So a lot of heavy stuff in here. I think we could probably continue to go longer, but this is going to be a fun series, I think, Ryan. 15 things and just looking at the next one, we've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, the next one's pretty beefy, but it's kind of neat to see this first one definitely held up. Like this is still, I think, the core guiding principle for what we're trying to achieve as far as our usage and our implementations of Scrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Still relevant.
Still working. All right. Let us know what you think in the comments. We are really curious to see if this kind of content is what you're after. So be sure to like, subscribe, let us know your comments and thoughts about this below. Please be sure to share this with friends. Sharing is caring. And of course, we love it when these things get spread around. But yeah, we'll be back. We got 14 more comments from Ken back in his 2006 paper to discuss. So until then, that's Todd. I'm Ryan. Go Scrum on. We'll see you next time. Hey, it's Ryan. If you're enjoying this show and want to take a deeper dive into Scrum with me and Todd, check out agileforhumans.com/training. Be sure to also look at the show notes to subscribe to our newsletter, get a copy of our book, Fixing Your Scrum, and learn more about working with us at Agile for Humans. Thanks for listening, and Scrum on!